comprehensive strategic partnership agreement with his colleague, and this is an unpleasant surprise for Donald Trump, who will soon return to the White House. Let me remind you that exactly 3 years ago, in January 2022, I was at that meeting when President Ibrahim Raisi was also in Moscow, and it was then that the process of drafting a comprehensive cooperation agreement was launched, which would create a basis for the formation of a strategic partnership between Russia and Iran, not in words, but in deeds, which would be signed on today. Iran has long sought this. Iran sees Russia as a very important player, not only in the Eurasian region or the Middle East, but also on a global scale and vice versa. Tehran believes that Russia is the country that is pursuing a policy of forming a new world order, and this fits into Iranian national interests. And plus, such a policy was already dictated by special economic conditions 3 years ago. Tehran believes that Iran will suffer less from Western sanctions pressure if it expands its trade and economic ties with Russia and China. And Western countries are offering Iran to level out relations with Russia and China in exchange for lifting most of the sanctions. They thought that Iran would go for this trick, but it did not, because it understands perfectly well that cutting off ties with Russia and China means giving itself a control shot in the head. So what does the agreement on comprehensive strategic partnership with Iran give Russia in terms of bilateral relations? I can say, and with more than 200 years of history of relations, the countries take their contacts to a completely new level. This means that after signing the agreement, the next stage is a strategic alliance, which has been repeatedly discussed in Iran and in Russia. First of all, this document will concern the development of economic relations, the reduction of all kinds of barriers. And today, trade turnover, for example, between Russia and Iran is about $4.5 billion, and it's growing. 5 years ago, I can say, I remember it, it was only $1.5 billion, a threefold increase. But this is a very little. The president set the task of increasing trade turnover to $10 billion over the next 10 years. And this is quite realistic. The agreement that the leaders will sign pursues precisely this goal, and an appropriate business climate must be created. So Russian investments must come to Iran, and Iranian ones to Russia. This will reduce the unemployment rate in Iran and put the national currency in order, and Iran needs Russian technologies. So this agreement, which will be signed today, is also an expansion of cultural and humanitarian ties. Anticipated entry of Russian citizens to Iran and facilitated entry of Iranian citizens to Russia so that they can study here, work, and returning back, be positively disposed towards our country. So it is important that Russian oil companies as well develop the numerous oil and gas fields of Iran that are not yet being developed by either the Chinese or the West. It is clear that all this is a long-term perspective. But neither Europe nor West as a whole is delighted that our countries are under their sanctions pressure, join forces to counter the sanctions, yes, and to shape a new understanding of international relations. So I will try to be short as possible. So Russia and Iran may have different views on certain issues, but both and Russia and Iran that believe that each country has its own ideas about the world. There is no way to avoid rough edges in international relations. But that is why both Iran and Russia have a language and diplomats, so that we can come to an agreement in case of disagreements. And both countries have not always have everything perfect in relations, but both countries accept, yes, and respect. Yes.
Well, I'd like to thank you very much, our correspondent Marina Kortunova, joining us there from Moscow. Please, we will stay with you for the latest developments. Israeli military keeps up its attacks on Gaza, killing more Palestinians in the besieged Strip. An airstrike on a tent for the displaced in the Al Mawasi camp took the life of 9 persons. 9 others were killed in an attack in northern Gaza. The victims were family members of a Palestinian journalist. The Israeli artillery also shelled the Al Zaytun neighborhood in southeast of Gaza City. Since the announcement of a Gaza ceasefire deal, over 100 Palestinians were killed in Israeli attacks hitting the blockaded territory. The death toll from the genocidal war on Gaza since October 2023 stands at around 46,800. Now joining us live from Deir al-Balah is our correspondent Abu Bakr Abed. Abu Bakr, again, we are just days away from the ceasefire to hopefully be implemented and take effect. And of course, as expected, the Israeli entity is actually escalating their attacks there on the Gaza Strip. What details do you have for us?
Of course, Israel continues blocking the blockaded territory for the past hours and even until now. Even here, when we talk about the central Gaza, in the latest round of attacks, central Gaza Al-Nusayrat camp has been relentlessly shelled over the course of the past hours across the northwestern regions. And Israeli drones and tanks have also shelled those parts in civilian infrastructure at the same time, causing several casualties that were transported to Al-Awda Hospital, and now they are being treated. And moving to even to Al-Buraij refugee camp inside central Gaza, the artillery has also shelled the northern parts of Al-Buraij camp. In Rafah and Khan Yunis, the same has happened. The artillery shelling hasn't stopped since the very early morning. Several casualties were left after separate attacks over the course of the past hours. In Jabalia, the Israelis are still obliterating houses and residential blocks, with Israeli tanks advancing further into the camp and shelling several regions and several residential blocks, with the quadcopters consistently dropping incendiary and explosive bombs on civilian structures and their shelters. So it's just a matter of 24 hours before the ceasefire is getting underway. But yet, Israel is ramping up its attacks and scaling up its killing, unleashing mass killings all across the Strip. And this is what we are afraid of, that the Israelis will even violate the ceasefire, and there will be much more delays to this ceasefire. And then we don't expect that this ceasefire, because we've been hearing from local sources and political analysts that the ceasefire might be delayed for another day. And another day means more death and more mass slaughter of civilians inside Gaza, who were celebrating just a few days ago this announcement.
Yes, we'd like to thank you very much there. Our correspondent Abu Bakr Abed joining us from Deir al-Balah. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu says a Gaza ceasefire deal has been reached with the Palestinian resistance movement Hamas. According to an announcement by Netanyahu's office, the regime's negotiating team has informed the premier of the reached agreement that will bring back home Israeli captives held in Gaza. The premier's office said an Israeli cabinet will convene later today to approve the truce agreement. If approved, a full Israeli cabinet meeting will then be held on Saturday. The announcement comes amid a division among Israeli politicians and members of the regime's cabinet. Far-right minister Itamar Ben-Gvir says he will quit the cabinet because the signed agreement is, quote, disastrous. However, Ben-Gvir added that he'll ensure Netanyahu remains prime minister. Iranian President Masoud Pezeshkian is in Moscow, and he was having his talks with his counterpart Vladimir Putin on this partnership that is supposed to be a milestone in the Iranian-Russian ties. Pezeshkian did say to Putin that this partnership is to boost relations and ties. He also said that they are trying to, or they have tried to, remove all the previous obstacles in relation to this agreement, and hopefully it will be signed soon. He also said that our relations, Iran's relations with Russia, are vital and strategic, and that they will be continuing on this path with strength. He also did mention that the region should be commanded by regional states, not from people from outside the region, other states coming and to impose their own policy, and that their ordeals will hopefully be foiled. Pro-Palestine protesters have held a fresh rally in the U.S. city of New York, welcoming the Gaza ceasefire agreement that is expected to take effect soon.
This is obviously an incredible moment, and it feels like a victory for the Palestinian people, and of course, most importantly, the people of Gaza. If this ceasefire happens starting on Sunday, we'll finally get the much-needed relief that they've been waiting for 15 months now.
It's still very sad, a very sad movement after 15 months of genocide, a genocide which is unimaginable, the first time in the history of the world, a genocide which is documented live on TV and social media.
The protest was held at Times Square, where hundreds of activists voiced their solidarity with the Palestinians suffering from Israel's genocidal war on Gaza for more than 15 months. The protesters condemned the Israeli regime for stalling the ceasefire to the war that has taken the lives of tens of thousands of Palestinians. They also slammed Washington's complicity in the Gaza genocide, demanding an end to all U.S. aid to Israel. The protesters vowed that their support for the Palestinians in Gaza will continue even after the ceasefire takes effect. There has also been a separate pro-Palestine rally in the Canadian city of Toronto. The protesters there said that the ceasefire could have been reached much sooner. The protesters gathered outside the Israeli consulate. They denounced Canada's support for the Israeli bloodshed in Gaza, calling for an arms embargo on the Tel Aviv regime. Since the start of the genocide in Gaza, there have been numerous anti-Israel rallies around the world, including in Western countries.
We are with you. What about you? IRIB English Radio.
Chair defense of Iranian combatants.
A senior Iranian lawmaker has said,
contrary to Washington's claims, America's
President Raisi has emphasized that
U.S. sanctions have failed to extract concessions from Tehran.
Iran Today.
As we welcome the new year, it's a fitting moment to reflect on the major events that shaped Iran in 2024. The year was marked by significant challenges, including tragic incidents that tested the nation's resolve, alongside notable achievements that showcased the strength and resilience of its people. From confrontations on the political stage to remarkable performances in international competitions, the past year tells a compelling story of perseverance and hope.
As we reflect on the past year in Iran, it is important to understand that it was a challenging time filled with plots hatched to leave deep scars across the nation. Acts of terror and sabotage were carried out with the ultimate goal of undermining stability and instilling fear and uncertainty within society.
The dawn of 2024 brought challenges for Iran, beginning with a devastating terrorist blast that set a grim tone for the year. On January 3rd, when people were coming from across the country to the southeastern Iranian city of Kerman to take part in the fourth memorial ceremony of martyr Lieutenant General Haj Qasem Soleimani, the world anti-terrorism champion, a double bombing disturbed the peaceful procession, leaving dozens dead and many more injured. Mr. Mohammad Javad Akhavan, editor-in-chief of Javan newspaper. He told us that all terrorists in the region have one thing in common, enmity towards Haj Qasem.
Shahid Soleimani ham ek shakhsiyati ast dar.
Mati Soleimani is a figure who played a significant role in the liberation of the peoples in the region from American operation and foreign occupation, as well as in the fight against terrorism. In other words, he was a hero in the fight against terrorists in the region, including both state-based terrorists like Israel and group-based terrorists like Daesh. Naturally, even the commemoration of Mati Soleimani is unbearable for these terrorists. They cannot stand it when ordinary people pay their respects to him. The terrorist operation that occurred at the beginning of last year in Kerman was supported by Israeli intelligence and security services, and Daesh terrorists executed such a heinous crime in a malicious collaboration with the Israeli regime.
After an unusual suspicious delay, Daesh claimed responsibility for the attack, although many at home and abroad deeply believed it was the Israeli regime that had pulled strings. The Kerman terrorist incident came almost a week after an Israeli air raid outside the Syrian capital of Damascus assassinated Sayed Razi Mousavi, a senior IRGC advisor, on December 25th. Mr. Mohammad Qadiri, Iranian journalist and political analyst based in Tehran. He said assassination is an option for those without real power.
If the Israeli regime were truly capable of fighting resistance groups directly, as it claims it can destroy them, then if it really had the means to eliminate groups like Hamas, Islamic Jihad, Hezbollah, Hashd-Shaabi, and Ansarullah, it wouldn't resort to assassination. It would settle things on the battlefield. Yet 16 months have passed, and the regime's declared objectives have not been accomplished. Instead, they turn to assassination and disclose their future targets. For instance, recently, due to the blows they have received from Yemen, they announced an assassination list, specifically naming the commander of Ansarullah as one of their targets. Such behavior stems from desperation, not strength. A powerful entity would never turn to assassination.
A few days before the assassination on December 18, a cyber attack disrupted services at around 60-70% of Iran's fuel stations. The Israel-linked group Predatory Sparrow, or Gonjeshke Darande in Persian, claimed it was behind the disruption. On Monday, January 15, the Islamic Revolution Guard Corps launches a barrage of its ballistic missiles. The targets, an Israeli spying nest located in Iraqi Kurdistan, and some terrorist groups based in Syria. We also sat with Mohammad Rouh, editor-in-chief of Hammihan newspaper.
Of course, the Americans and Israelis understand well that escalating tensions with Iran will not serve their interests. They know that while they may initiate a war with Iran, they will not determine its outcome. Historically, Iran has always been a center of stability in the region, regardless of its ruling system, and no other country in the region can fulfill that role. Targeting the center of stability in the region would certainly jeopardize the interests of other countries, including the United States, which is not something they would desire. While they would prefer to see Iran limited and weakened, they do not want this to happen at any cost.
At home on Friday, March 1st, millions of Iranian people went to the polls to select 290 lawmakers from among over 15,000 candidates. The poll was twinned with a vote for 88 members of the Assembly of Experts, a body tasked with choosing and supervising the leader of the Islamic Revolution. 1 month later, on April 1st, Israel carried out a targeted airstrike on a building nestled within the Iranian embassy complex in Damascus. Prior to the attack, the regime had assassinated at least 18 members of the Quds Force, among them four senior commanders who were veterans of West Asia wars. Almost 2 weeks later, on late Saturday, April 13th, the Islamic Republic of Iran began Operation True Promise by launching explosive drones and firing missiles at Israeli-occupied territory. The Iranian salvo of more than 300 drones and missiles was Tehran's first direct attack on the Israeli regime after a long period of strategic patience. Iran, under the severest sanctions, did what the Arab coalitions had failed to do over the past seven decades, to humiliate the Israeli regime and scare the life out of it.
Following Iran's Operation True Promise, triggered by Israel's attack on Iran's consulate in Damascus and a martyrdom of Iranian officials, the regime attempted to answer Iran, but did so weakly, and their response was of little consequence. However, with the formation of the new administration in Iran and the assassination of Ismail Haniyeh in Tehran, Israel once again ignited the flames of tension. After this incident and following the martyrdom of Sayed Hassan Nasrallah in Lebanon, one of Iran's regional allies, Iran displayed its second response to Israel under the title of Operation True Promise 2. This operation was larger than the previous one, Operation True Promise 1, and represented the largest missile operation against Israel since its foundation.
In a year full of unexpected challenges, the sudden passing of President Sayed Ebrahim Raisi in a helicopter crash in May 2024 left the nation in shock. Despite the tragedy, the Iranian people remarkably pulled themselves together and swiftly organized the snap election.
Naturally, the most significant internal event for Iran was the incident involving President Raisi, which led to a series of changes in domestic policy and is expected to result in further changes in the country's foreign policy in the future. In fact, we will witness the consequences of this change in Iran's political structure in the coming months.
Iran wasted no time jumping into action for early presidential elections barely a week after the incident. Mandated by Article 131 of Iran's constitution, the electoral timeline demands that a new president be democratically chosen within a maximum of 50 days following the death or incapacitation of the incumbent leader. In response to this constitutional imperative, a council composed of key authorities promptly convened and unanimously determined June 28th as the designated date for the early presidential elections. Aspiring candidates officially entered the race during the registration period from May 30th to June 3rd. A slew of influential figures from diverse political factions threw their hats into the ring for the presidential race. On Friday, June 28th, Iranians went to the polls to select a new president. With a field of four candidates, the election drew to a close around 12 a.m. local time after a series of extensions, ensuring that all eligible voters had the opportunity to cast their ballots. The preliminary results from the votes indicated that no candidate could secure the necessary majority to win the election outright. As a result, the election was set to proceed to a second round of voting, scheduled to take place on July 5th. In a consequential runoff, Mr. Masoud Pezeshkian captured over 16.3 million votes, emerging victorious over his conservative challenger, Saeed Jalili, who won over 13.5 million. This outcome effectively paved the way for the reformist-endorsed contender to ascend to the esteemed position of Iran's ninth president.
Significant events occurred in the past year, including the parliamentary elections, where a new Majlis, or Islamic Consultative Assembly, was established. A tragic incident involving the late President Ayatollah Raisi led to the abrupt end of the 13th administration in Iran, and subsequently early presidential elections were held in the country. These two changes, one in the legislative branch and one in the executive branch, happened almost simultaneously in the summer of 2024, resulting in crucial impacts on Iran's political developments. An interesting point during this period was that although Iran faced an unexpected political crisis, namely the untimely death of the president coinciding with a change in parliament, the country did not experience a social or economic crisis during this time when there was no president and the members of parliament had not yet officially assumed office. Iran managed to maintain its stability during this phase thanks to the crucial role of the leader of the Islamic Revolution in ensuring political and social stability.
On the last day of July, just hours after the inauguration of Iran's new president, a significant event unfolded in the heart of Tehran. Ismail Haniyeh, the political chief of Hamas, was assassinated in his temporary residence. The finger of suspicion immediately fell on Israel, and the passage of time showed that it was not a baseless allegation, as the regime itself later on confessed to the terrorist act. This is Mehdi Rahmanian, editor-in-chief of Sharq newspaper. He said Israel's assassination of Ismail Haniyeh in Tehran was shocking, but in no way surprising.
You see, the Israeli regime adheres to none of the fundamental human principles. This behavior isn't new. It has been their modus operandi since the illegitimate inception of Israel. Right from the start, they began the massacre of the Palestinian people. In every village they invaded, they would kill the residents and leave one person alive to carry the news of the massacre to other villages, instilling fear and terror in the process. The atrocities committed by the regime after October 7 are not surprising. They are in line with their history. Therefore, it's no wonder that they assassinated our official guest in Tehran.
In the wake of Haniyeh's assassination, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, the leader of the Islamic Revolution, issued a stark warning. A harsh response would be forthcoming against Israel. He articulated a resolute stance, declaring that avenging Haniyeh's death is not merely an option, but a solemn duty for the Islamic Republic. The criminal and terrorist Zionist regime has martyred our esteemed guests on our soil and caused us grief. But it has also paved the way for severe retribution, Ayatollah Khamenei declared.
The repercussions of October 7, 2023 actually became the source of many important events in 2024. The serious consequences for Iran materialized in the spring of 2024. Initially, Israel attacked the Iranian consulate, and in response, Iran carried out Operation True Promise 1 against the regime. Although Iran's retaliatory operation was limited, it was considered the first direct confrontation between Tehran and Tel Aviv, and is therefore highly significant. This direct confrontation did not end there. Tensions escalated following the assassination of Ismail Haniyeh in Iran by Israel and a series of other hostile actions, prompting Tehran to launch Operation True Promise 2 against the Zionist regime. Now, as we enter 2025, talks of further confrontations continue, and the shadow of war still looms over the region.
We have a lot more to cover today, but first let's take a moment to catch up on the latest headlines.
This is Iran Today. Iran Today is broadcast every week on Fridays and Saturdays. The series analyzes major political, economic, cultural, and social events concerning Iran. So don't miss the opportunity to listen to Iran Today on IRIB English Radio.
Hello everyone, welcome to the news section of this program. Here, we'll go over some important news headlines. China Daily: Iranians hold high-level ceremonies and pay tribute to assassinated Soleimani. While Iran held high-level memorial services to pay tribute to late Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani, Iran's President Masoud Pezeshkian said Soleimani spent his whole life defending the oppressed and focusing on efforts to enhance unity among Islamic countries. At a ceremony held on January 2nd at the Grand Musalla Mosque in Tehran to mark the fifth martyrdom anniversary of Soleimani, President Pezeshkian said that Soleimani serves as a perpetual model for the path we should take, as he practiced piety and spent his entire life defending the oppressed and serving people. He stood up to defend the oppressed in every corner of the world, including Iraq, Syria, Lebanon, and Afghanistan, regardless of people's religion, personal taste, and views. Tehran Times. NDF announces cooperation with China on foreign investment. Hossein Eyvazlu, a member of the executive board of Iran's National Development Fund, NDF, announced plans for collaboration with China in the field of foreign investment in Iran. Speaking at a press conference on Saturday, January 4th, Eyvazlu highlighted the importance of attracting foreign capital to boost Iran's economic projects, emphasizing the role of strategic partnerships with countries like China. On December 20th, a Shanghai Cooperation Organization representative announced that the Chinese investors are prepared to fund the construction of combined cycle power plants in Iran's energy-rich Khuzestan province to help address the country's energy imbalance and boost regional economic development. Jobin Hay, the executive director of SCO's Iran office, made their marks during a meeting with Khuzestan's governor and local religious leaders. We are here to pay our respects to provincial authorities and outline China's plans for strengthening economic and trade ties with a particular focus on Khuzestan, Zhou said. First post, Iran's foreign minister warns of large-scale war as he vows to retaliate Israeli attack. Iranian foreign minister Abbas Araghchi stated that Tehran is fully prepared for any future Israeli attacks and warned that such actions could trigger a broader conflict in the region leading to a large-scale war. These comments were made by the Iranian foreign minister during an interview with Chinese state-run media, which was aired on Saturday. We are fully prepared for the possibility of further Israeli attacks, Araghchi told China's CCTV, as translated by the broadcaster. I hope Israel will avoid such reckless actions as they could escalate into a large-scale war, he added further. Tehran Times. What's Israel's goal in spreading false narratives about Haniyeh's assassination in Tehran? The Hamas resistance movement has refuted Israeli claims about the assassination of its late political bureau chief Ismail Haniyeh, stating that he was killed by a guided missile targeting his mobile phone, not a plant bomb, as Israel alleges. In a statement on Sunday, Hamas rejected all fabrications by Israel, clarifying that joint investigations with Iranian authorities revealed a missile containing 7.5 kilograms of explosives was used. Hamas also condemned the assassination as a violation of Iranian sovereignty. The claim made by the Zionist regime are only a desperate attempt to divert public opinion from this multi-layered crime, which has been committed by clearly violating the sovereignty of the Islamic Republic of Iran and targeting one of the country's official headquarters, the group's statement added. Haniyeh was martyred on July 31st in a Tehran guest house, hours after he had attended President Masoud Pezeshkian's inauguration. Middle East Monitor, Khamenei's advisor, Al-Aqsa flood operation, starting point for regional change. October 2023 was the starting point for regional change, Ali Akbar Velayati's senior advisor to the leader of the revolution, Ayatollah Khamenei, has said. Speaking in Tehran on Wednesday, Velayati said the formation of the Axis of Resistance as a defensive and security coalition in West Asia and the emergence of the geopolitics of resistance following establishment represents significant achievements of the Islamic movement in recent years. He added that the United States, striving to maintain its dominance and avoid decline through the dual tools of threat and appeasement, has sought to suppress or derail various movements and groups opposing its unilateralism across Central America to Southeast Asia over the past century. And that's it for today. Thank you for joining us. Please do stay tuned for the main narrative.
In the face of all challenges, hope persisted in the heart of the nation. The Iranian people continued to seek a future free from the grip of war and terror and instead marked by durable peace and sustainable development. Amidst the turmoil, Iran celebrated significant achievements on the international stage, with its athletes shining at the Paris Olympic Games and students excelling in World Academic Olympiads. Iranian students delivered an absolutely spectacular performance, clinching the third place in the world and outshining big names like South Korea, India, Japan, Germany, the whole world, but the U.S. and China. Additionally, strengthened ties with major international organizations such as the Shanghai Cooperation Organization and BRICS signaled a promising new phase of economic prosperity, even in the face of severe Western sanctions. It dovetails with the country's policy of pivot to the East, which seeks, among other things, strategic allies against the hegemony of the West, solutions for the country's banking and trade issues caused chiefly by U.S. sanctions.
Iran is not located in some remote corner. Rather, it sits at a global crossroads. Historically and geopolitically, Iran has always held great significance. When it comes to human and natural resources, the country has much to offer and could occupy a far higher position than it currently does. Membership in the Shanghai Cooperation Organization and BRICS is beneficial, but Iran's interactions with the world should not be limited to these two organizations. Iran should also focus on joining other international organizations to secure the best possible future for itself.
Meanwhile, in response to a wave of assassinations by Israel on October 1st, Iran initiated a significant military operation against the regime. Dubbed Operation True Promise 2, the mission targeted Israel's key military and intelligence installations. The operation involved the launch of approximately 200 ballistic missiles from Iranian territory. This military action followed a period of deliberate restraint by Iran, which had refrained from retaliating against a series of terrorist attacks that resulted in the deaths of prominent figures, including Hamas leader Ismail Haniyeh, Hezbollah Secretary General Sayyid Hassan Nasrallah, an Iranian military advisor in Lebanon, Brigadier General Abbas Nilfurushan.
You can see how much pressure has been exerted on the Islamic Republic over the last 15 years to force it into an unwelcome war. In fact, Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu did everything in his power to draw Iran into conflict. However, Iran wisely avoided entering a long-term war of attrition with the Israeli regime and the U.S. Iran projected its deterrent power through operations dubbed True Promise 1 and True Promise 2. The enemy realized that if it continued its provocative operations, it would face severe repercussions from Tehran. Additionally, it's important to note that Iran has also shown considerable success in diplomacy. The positive interactions Tehran had with the region, particularly during Martar Raisi's presidency and afterwards, helped prevent Netanyahu's military adventures against Iran due to the strong positions of these nations in support of the Islamic Republic and its sovereignty.
In mid-November, Iran marked a significant milestone in its space ambitions with the successful launch of two new satellites, Khosat and Hodhod. This launch represents a pivotal moment in Iran's ongoing efforts to enhance its space capabilities, following a previous achievement in March when the Chamran satellite was successfully orbited using the domestically developed Qaem space launch vehicle. Looking ahead, Iran plans to accelerate its space program with the upcoming launch of up to 7 additional satellites in the near future, utilizing both the Qaem and the Simorgh, another indigenous SLV. These advancements come in the face of decades of harsh, unjust sanctions imposed by the West, underscoring Iran's determination to assert its technological independence and develop its space exploration capabilities against all odds. On December 8, 2024, the government of President Bashar al-Assad came to a dramatic and unexpected end as Hayat Tahrir al-Sham led a concerted offensive supported by the so-called Syrian National Army.
I believe that the events that took place in 2024 were on the scale of those that could happen over the course of a century. The most significant event of 2024, in my opinion, was the fall of Bashar al-Assad's government in Syria, marking the end of 55 years of Assad family's rule over the country. Such events, which could occur only over a century, will naturally influence the new year. In this regard, we can say that 2024 is a precursor to the events expected to unfold in 2025. When Albert Einstein was asked what weapons humanity would use in World War III, he replied that while he didn't know about World War III, in World War IV, people would fight with shovels and pickaxes. I mention this because the events of 2024 could drive the world in a direction that no one ever imagined.
Given its history of assistance, Iran was widely expected to rush to Assad's aid once again as Hayat Tahrir al-Sham, or HTS, began its advance to Damascus. However, this time the Syrian government showed little resistance, and Iran refrained from sending its forces and military experts to the country.
Regarding the events that occurred for various sides of the resistance axis, the Islamic Republic managed to provide both moral and material support to resistance groups in the region while avoiding direct involvement in wars, whether in Lebanon, Gaza, or Syria. This reflects the wisdom and strategic foresight of the Iranian leadership. In a tumultuous region like West Asia, you can still see that a country like Iran remains a land of peace, stability, and security, where its people can lead their normal lives.
In the wake of Tahrir al-Sham's capture of Damascus, the Iranian Foreign Ministry quickly reaffirmed its commitment to Syria's unity and stability. Iran also reiterated its support for international efforts based on United Nations Resolution 2254, highlighting Syria's vital role in the West Asia region, underscoring the necessity of protecting all Syrian citizens and safeguarding religious and holy sites. By advocating for a collaborative approach, Iran appears to be seeking a way forward in a country that has experienced enough turmoil for a lifetime, seeking not only to heal old wounds, but also to lay the groundwork for a hopeful future. As we move on to the new year, it's our collective strength and determination that will shape the road ahead. So far, the Iranian nation has remained vigilant and committed to its ideals, hoping that one day prosperity in all its forms and shapes will reign supreme in the country and across the region.
In my view, 2024 was a challenging yet hopeful year. The difficulties were evident as both internal and regional developments created tough conditions for the country, both politically and economically. However, it was also a hopeful year in the sense that the Iranian people once again demonstrated their national unity and solidarity despite all the hardship. And you can sense hope within the community, hope for a better, brighter future.
That's all for today. Thank you from the whole team. Until next time, take care.
Seven barometric pressure.
We come to you, and O God, knowing that thou art our only King.
You're listening to the program Bookshelf on Iran Radio with Sheikh Yasser, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Qom.
A'udhu billahi minash shaitani rajim. Bismillahir rahmanir rahim. Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad wa ajjil farajhum. Assalamu alaykum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh, dear listeners. Welcome to our program Bookshelf with me, Brother Yasser Ibrahim. And continuing our discussion on the series of books titled Logic, which is an introduction to the Islamic sciences, rather a book that is read within the introductory phase of one's Islamic journey. Not only that, if you go to any seminary, whether it be a Catholic seminary or an Islamic seminary, especially within the Shia world, logic is an integral and important part of the studies of any seminarian. It is essential. Maybe in our future episodes we will introduce some of the logic books that were written by Catholic priests and Catholic scholars and seminarians. Some of them are very good. And what is good about them is that they were written originally in English, whereas most of the books that we have in the Islamic seminary, for obvious reasons, are originally in Arabic or in Farsi, in Persian. But this one, which was translated into English by our dear brother Shiraz Hussein Agha, who you heard from in our previous episode dealing with this book, we won't bother him again. He says he translated these three volumes as a means to help the students within the seminary, because as a person will read, they will see that there are certain things that needs to be obviously known beforehand. So the second volume deals with what is known as tasdiqat, or affirmations, or what is known as inferences also, depending on how you use it in the English language. So inshallah, in our next episode, inshallah, in our next segment, we will speak a bit more about the book. So please stay tuned.
Among the sacred texts we have received to help us understand where we came from and where we are going as a human race are most rich in helping us find our direction. They narrate stories of our past, but where have they brought us? Where are their messages now? Are we the people of belief, or have we become the people of the boxes? Is there wisdom trapped in our bookshelves? Bookshelves, bookshelves, bookshelves.
Welcome back, listeners, to our program Bookshelf with me, Yasser Ibrahim. So the book that we have introduced to our dear listeners in this episode was the second volume of the book titled Logic, which is an introduction, which was a translation of the book Al-Mantiq, written by Sheikh Muhammad Rida Al-Muzaffar and translated by Shiraz Hussein Agha. So one thing that is interesting about Sheikh Muzaffar that we would like to mention is that Sheikh Muzaffar himself wrote these textbooks. Now, why is that important? Is that during most of the Islamic textbooks that we have are taken from the lessons of the scholar. For example, most of the books are not translated into English, obviously. For example, one of the books that is read in fiqh, in the higher levels, is known as Makasib. Makasib is a book that was the lessons of Sheikh Ansari, rahmatullah alayh. However, there are certain books that were written, and those books are, you know, obviously beneficial in their own right. But this book was not only written by Sheikh Muhammad Rida Muzaffar, it was also typed by him. In Najaf, he was one of the first individuals to get hold of a typewriter, and he taught himself, and he typed his own books out with his old school typewriters. So he would sit there, type, and he typed out his own books. Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala bless him. That is why you see that maybe because of the effort that he did in producing these books for students, that his books are still alive today and are still read. Many of his books are still read, especially in the subject of the principles of jurisprudence, that is usul fiqh, and in logic, that is mantiq. And these are two of the primary sciences and subjects that a student needs to know within the Islamic seminary. So again, as we mentioned, this is about the author himself, and again about the second part of the book, which again was published by Bukhtar Publications under the auspices of the Avicenna Institute for Research, and was published in the year 2023. This is the second volume that we have introduced to our dear listeners in this particular segment and program, which deals with the tasdiqat. Now, what are tasdiqat? Tasdiqat obviously is the next step towards a person's thinking process. When a person first gets knowledge of certain individual tasawwurat or conceptions, and he understands them, he defines them, he then creates sentences, what are known as qadaya. He puts two concepts together and gives a statement, he gives a hukum, he gives a judgment, he gives a is or is not statement. For example, a person understands the concept of cold, and they understand the concept of tea, and then they put the two together and they say the tea is cold, for example, or the tea is warm, for example, or the tea is not tasty, for example. So these are what is known as tasdiqat, or what are known as affirmations, that by taking two tasawwurat, two conceptions, you either join them together, you create a unity between them, or by doing a is-not type of statement, you remove them from one another, that they have no relationship between them. So, in fact, you are creating a relationship between these tasawwurats that exists already in the outside world. You are just establishing that particular relationship. Anyway, there's a long discussion here. We don't want to go into it. But this basically, in a nutshell, is what the concept of tasdiqat is. So in order to get a bit more information about the book, let us hear from the translator himself, Brother Shiraz Hussein Agha.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. The book Logic, Al-Mantiq of Allama Muhammad Rida Al-Muzaffar is basically divided into three parts, which I have translated in separately as three volumes. The second volume is concerned with affirmation, which we call in Arabic tasdiq. And basically in this section, the author, he wants to discuss propositions. He divides propositions into those which are self-evident and those which are non-evident and need to be proven. And then he discusses basically in this volume the form and structure of the different kinds of arguments that one can use to prove a theoretical proposition, some of which are direct, others of which are indirect. And you know, in this volume, there's the main discussion is about the five basically the five figures, Aristotelian figures, as well as exceptional syllogisms, converses, both by contradiction and those that are not by contradiction. This is a summary of the second volume of Logic.
Welcome back, dear listeners, to our program Bookshelf with me, Brother Yasser Ibrahim. The book that we have introduced to our dear listeners was titled Mantiq or Logic by Sheikh Muhammad Ridha Al-Muzaffar, translated by Shiraz Hussein Agha. And this is the second volume of that set. As we said, the set was published in three volumes, whereas the original Arabic is one volume. Because of the addition of the Arabic to the English translation, it obviously expanded the book and made it more valuable for a person who truly wants to understand the subject. So we'll read from the heading, the categories of the proposition. And again, obviously, as we mentioned, that the next step in a person's thinking process is to create these statements, these propositions, by using the tasavvurat or the concepts that a person has. One, the categorical proposition is like iron is a mineral. Usury is impermissible. Truth is praiseworthy. The liar is not trustworthy. The miser will never succeed. So this is the start of propositions and the discussion in the second volume of Al-Mantiq. Inshallah, in our next episode, we will complete the set with the third volume. Inshallah, until then, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah wa barakatuh.
You just listened to the program Bookshelf on Iran Radio with Sheikh Yasser, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Qom.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
President Masoud Pezeshkian arrives in Moscow to sign a strategic partnership treaty with his Russian counterpart, Vladimir Putin. Israel carries out more deadly strikes on Gaza, despite the regime's confirmation that a ceasefire deal has been reached with Hamas. And fresh pro-Palestine rallies have been held in New York and Toronto, where protesters vow to continue their support for the people of Gaza. And welcome to World News. Let's go ahead and get started with the stories that matter. Iran's President Masoud Pezeshkian has arrived in Moscow to meet with high-ranking Russian officials, including the country's head of state, Vladimir Putin. Upon arrival, Pezeshkian was welcomed by a number of Russian officials, including the country's energy minister. He also sat down with Russian Prime Minister Mikhail Mishustin. Later today, the Iranian president will ink a comprehensive strategic partnership pact in a meeting with Putin. According to Iran's ambassador to Russia, the strategic agreement covers a wide range of areas and relations. The deal is set to provide avenues to skirt U.S. and EU sanctions through trade in national currencies and alternative payment mechanisms. The Iranian president's visit to Russia comes after his trip to Tajikistan, where he signed nearly two dozen cooperation documents with Tajik officials. Well, now joining us live from Moscow is our correspondent, Marina Kortunava. Marina, thank you very much for joining us. So we did see the welcoming ceremony for the president, the Iranian president, Pezeshkian, and now he has been sitting down with officials. What details do you have for us? Are we close to signing this agreement?
Well, right now I'm in the press center of the Kremlin, and it has been known that Russian Prime Minister Mikhail Mishustin met with Iranian President Masoud Pezeshkian a few minutes ago, and the meeting with President Putin will begin any minute now. So Iran and Russia to become partners, no brothers in arms. What do most journalists and experts say? And the treaty between the two countries envisages deep in economic cooperation, but not a military alliance. So what is known that Iranian President Masoud Pezeshkian's visit to Moscow can be called historic. 6 months ago, there were concerns that after the reformist